Welcome, everybody, to the Discovering Forestry podcast. My name is Corey. I'm your host today, and we've got a very special guest to join us on our compelling conversation about trees. Our guest today comes all the way from the center of the country, a small but beautiful state known as Iowa. Chris Olson, welcome to the program. How are you today?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Corey. I sure appreciate you having me on and doing great. I mean, beautiful day, and you can't ask for much better.
So, Chris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get into the tree industry, and what does your day-to-day look like right now?
I got into the industry through my brother and brother-in-law, who have been working as arborist and or tree service since the 90s. And I was working in a different industry, but I'd work with them from time to time. I kind of got a little behind the scenes viewpoint, you know, before ever entering it. And it just turned out that one job came about and another one. And before you know it, I was full on into the industry. It was around 2008 when the market crashed. And so I'd been working on and off with them on the ground doing stuff. And I was working as a mechanical engineer and had a well-paying job, but I had kind of maxed out what I was going to do with that. And so in my spare time, I would remodel homes, and I was doing a flight of stairs on this, outdoor living space on a home. It wasn't a deck like they have in the Midwest. This was in the Southwest. But anyhow, there was some tree work that needed to be done. And so I did it, and I enjoyed it. And it took me back to my childhood. I spent my my youth in Arkansas in the Ozark Mountains. And so I have a kind of unique story, parentless kid, you know, adopted, and then kind of they gave up on me in my rebellious teen years. And so they sent me off to this boarding school in Arkansas in the middle of the mountains. And so I'm out there in the trees, and that became my family. It became my peace, my happiness. And so it really took me back to that, and I found satisfaction with it. And so the first thing I did was take the TCIA, I can't remember the name of it right now.
Like an intro course, sure.
Yeah. It was the, I want to say tree care arborist, whatever it is, but I took whatever their course was, and it was a two-part thing past that. And then, you know, started working in the industry at that time. But immediately, my whole kind of perception of things is different. So my mom, who is dead and died when I was young, she was schizophrenic, right? And so I lived with her for 3 years, and she was I don't want to say crazy to be demeaning towards somebody, but sure. I mean, it was erratic. I mean, she would throw me in the Mississippi River and someone else would have to get me out, and they'd say, "What are you doing?" And she'd say, "Well, I'm baptizing them." It'd be 2 o'clock in the morning in Minnesota in the middle of winter, and someone would find me at 2 years old sitting on a snowbank butt naked. And so that was kind of my first few years. Well, what happened, and I understand this now that I'm getting older, that my first developmental thing that I developed is a visual perception IQ. I can look at things and have a different take on it, because I believe that in my early years, if I didn't do it, there was some serious stuff going on. And so it really developed in me. And so that's my strong suit. And so I entered into the industry, and I mean, the first thing I identified was thinning. If you thin a tree, you'll get a branch break shortly thereafter. I started to identify these flaws. Cabling just changes the loading dynamics. And, you know, arborists would go out and cable, and then, you'd have a failure soon after based on the change in loading dynamics. And so while other people were kind of looking at the industry one way, I was looking a totally different way. And so I really backed off early on. And while I still worked and stuff, I started kind of practicing what I knew was right. And so everybody else was still thinning trees. And I'm like, no, telling clients I'm not going to thin the tree. You know, there's no future in removing trees. Same thing. I got out of that, and I would remove trees if there was storm damage, if there was risk involved, if there were the issues that needed to be there. But for the client that doesn't like a mess, you know, has some crazy issues going on and they want to use it for psychiatric care, I wasn't doing it. I wouldn't participate. And so all the while that I was working, I was gathering data and going forward. And it turns out that now thinning is, you know, basically taken out of the pruning standards. It's in there as a definition, but nobody wants to thin your tree. It increases the risk, right? Is what we found out. And it decreases the vitality. Well, I had already identified that, you know, a long time ago. And it was one of the first things I did. Well, there's a lot of things I've identified that I'm still working on. Some of them I'm actually doing research on now, controlled research, where I'm setting up long-term experiments, okay, to prove something out or to not prove it. You know, basically I'm coming in with a hypothesis. And so my day kind of revolves around plant healthcare education. I spoke at Iowa State Shade Tree Short Course here a few weeks back. Experimentation, forensic, consulting, tree risk assessment, right? And all the basics. And that's kind of what I do. I still have equipment. You know, I still have a nifty lift. I still have loaders and all the stuff, but I don't have all the employees anymore. I ran 10 or more employees for plenty long enough and grew real tired of that. And so I kind of transitioned into a different arena where everything starts on the evaluation level. And so I still have a tree care company, right? But if someone calls and says, hey, how much to remove that branch? I don't go anywhere. I say, well, we'll start with an evaluation. I mean, we're going to do a vitality assessment or a tree risk assessment or a consultation, right? We're going to start with something on the tree. If you called your doctor or a doctor you don't even know, right? Mm-hmm. Corey, and you call the doctor and you're like, hey, my name's Corey. Can you prescribe me this, right? What are they going to say? They're going to be like, yeah, well, you come in for a physical first. And then if we have to, we'll run some tests and we'll do what in our industry is a level 3 advanced assessment, right? But you start with the level 2 basic, right? Or if it's a big property, you start with a level 1 and you go through and you look at everything and you do a limited visual. And so, you know, to practice a profession, you have to act like a professional. And so I made that change. And, that's what my life looks like now. And so I no longer get a lot of calls for, hey, we need to remove our tree or this or that. Because if you need to remove your tree, that is determined by a tree risk assessment, not by you wanting to cut your tree down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the bottom line. And so when you look at it from that vantage point, everything stems from the recommendations in your reports. And so that's kind of the direction and what my life looks like now. I still do some work, but it's, you know, it's different.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Basically you've been with the tree, a heavy tree focus. It's about 2008. So we're looking, you know, 15, 16 years. You've gone through all the ranks at BCMA, I assume at this point as well. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so board certified master arborist, certified arborist, you've got all these things, you had this business, but you've got to a point to where you can pick and choose your ideal client and they're calling you or they're sticking with you because of that value that you continue to bring. And I think ultimately, Chris, I think so often in our industry, you were kind of alluding to it a little bit earlier, but there's not really a huge future in pruning and removals, especially when it's unnecessary. And if you do it correctly, you can only do it once.
That's right. And much of the industry, it revolves around removing tree parts, biomass removal, right? And so what I am is something refreshing that nobody gets anywhere else. And so the general thing is a sales arborist comes out for free, looks at the tree. Yeah, it's got to go. And I'll be here on Tuesday. That's kind of the industry standard. Or you get someone caught in a pruning cycle, Then you have sprout development. The tree responds, right? To the stress. It's trying to replace biomass, aid wood functionality. I mean, sprouts are doing all these good things. And then they get them caught in a cycle where they're every 2 years coming out, pruning them sprouts to maintain aesthetics. That's the whole industry. And so if you go out and someone's paying first thing The first thing that someone would want to think if they were going to do this is people appreciate what they pay for. And so if you're going out for free, you're going to get treated like you're free. But if someone's paying for your advice, paying for an evaluation, they actually take that different. And we all do the same thing. Me and you are wired the same way. We appreciate what we pay for more than what is free. And so when you go out and talk to them, if you're explaining to them, you know, hey, you don't want to remove that branch over your roof. It's actually a protection factor. Should you have a branch in the canopy fail, it'll actually minimize the consequence of failure. In addition, it's a wind loading protection factor, buffering the interior branches that don't have any reaction wood development based on the stimuli of the wind loading direction. You go and remove that branch, you're going to increase the risk of the other branches failing, and you're going to increase your consequence of failure. So I go out, Corey, and I tell somebody that in the process of them paying me a small amount of money to assess the tree, their mind's blown. Oh, because I'm the only one saying that. Everybody else is saying, yeah, we got to cut it and we'll be out on Tuesday. You know what I mean? They're, oh yeah, I'll do it, you know.
Well, and that's such a big part about raising the standard of and redefining what it means to truly be a professional and to truly be, I like to call it like a tree fiduciary. You're truly looking out for the best interest of the tree. And oftentimes I wish Joe was on the show because tonight, because he'd tell you that we prune for human reasons. And oftentimes we over prune and do it incorrectly. But a homeowner, and I've witnessed this when I was doing more residential work. I remember a homeowner being on a job and saying something to the effect of, well, that's it. And it kind of puzzled me, but then somebody brought up the point that, well, this homeowner was probably trained from another tree care individual that they should expect pruning by the pound. Somebody should be in the tree removing. And I just, it blew my mind because so much of that takes the science out of it. I mean, start off with the most basic thing. Why do trees put out branches and leaves? What is the point of those leaves? And the homeowner, sometimes that light switch goes off. But Chris, I think you've done something well by positioning yourself as being a paid professional. It's not a free consult. This education took, you know, 15, 20 years to get here. I'm not giving it out for free, but I will do the right thing by you and your tree.
Yeah. And the thing is I would say 50% of the people I go out and meet need some services. Sometimes I provide those. 50% don't. A lot of times it's very simple do-it-yourself root crown excavation that they can do. It's a change in their watering. Maybe they can adjust their downspouts and increase moisture to an area. It's different things like this that they can do. Maybe they can reduce a squirrel population that's exposing the tree to canker-causing fungi. I mean, there's all this different stuff. And so a lot of times they can do it. Maybe they want to know how to plant a tree well, and you can walk them through that, how to establish one, how to properly water a tree. And so, yeah, it helps immensely to start there because you are creating somebody you can have a conversation with, right? You can talk to them on your level and say, hey, this is where things are, and I'm going to bring you up in where you're at, and we're going to have a conversation about what's actually good for the tree. I had one today with a client I've had for 4 years now, and I had to go over coronet cutting or fracture pruning with the person again because they had a branch break. It left an overextended remaining branch, parent branch that it came off of. There's only about 3 to 4 feet of fractured branch left on that. He really wants to cut it back too. And it's about an 8-inch diameter branch. He wants to cut it back to the parent branch. And I'm telling him, look, that's pushing fungi close to the tree. You're creating a wound that the tree has to immediately respond to. And then there's a belief that through cornet cutting, fracture pruning, you're duplicating and eliciting a good response from the tree. And I said, we can make that final cut outside the branch protection zone on that section, but let's allow the tree to go kind of through what it needs to go through to translocate any resources that might be available, to reallocate those, develop biomass if needed in other areas, and most of all, develop a robust wound occlusion response. And that's kind of one of the things I'm experimenting with right now, is the natural branch occlusion model. And so when you look at cornet cutting, it is the duplication of a fractured branch. And so you're duplicating the way that a branch fracture happens due to load. And you're trying to duplicate that because the tree responds extremely hard to it. Okay. And it's duplicatable out of nature. But we don't have a pruning cut to duplicate the way a tree eliminates a branch. And so a tree eliminates a branch slowly. When a tree identifies a branch as not performing well, and it'll pull back from that over the course of years, and you can watch the branch protection zone swell up in advance, knowing that the branch is failing. It'll translocate resources out of the branch section. The vascular tissue is still alive, even though it's dead sometimes and the foliage is gone, it's still connected to the vascular system. If it's alive, it's being maintenanced. And maintenance respiration is something that a tree does, okay? And so it can do that in that section. And so what you end up with is the stance, which is softened against heading cuts, okay? And it's softened a bunch. If you look back 15 years ago, very frowned on, right? Mm-hmm. Now, everybody is embracing a heading cut and understanding that it has some value, especially on bigger branches, because if you push that wound close to the branch, you're creating something that the tree has to respond to. I mean, there are two different things that go on when a tree is wounded. All right. Not only are you causing dysfunction, and the dysfunction is coming from loss of storage of starches, the moisture and nutrient conductivity of the area, right? Thermodynamics, you can get frost cracking, pest and pathogen, potential for future compartmentalization. A lot of people don't think of that. If the tree is trying to compartmentalize the wound and a squirrel comes along and girdles the response growth, there is no secondary. I mean, you're going to get into a canker-causing fungi. You're going to get into a big problem because the tree doesn't have subsequent layers of sapwood to develop that wall too. And so not only is that dysfunction caused, there's a second thing, a response required. The tree has to replace the connective tissues responsible for the moisture and nutrient conductivity. It has to be replaced. Supplemental support development, biomass replacement, you get into reaction wood compensation. So let's say we lose a section. Nobody's thinking of this when you cut a branch. You cut a section off. Now the wind loading changes to the remaining branches. The tree actually has to dedicate resources to develop reaction wood to handle the loading, the wind loading dynamic change. And so you can't just go in and cut off a bunch of branches and the tree not have to respond. The tree has to respond to all of these things and then have multiple layers of sapwood. And here would be my last point on this cut, and it stems from this client I talked to today. The wall two of the CODIT model, right, is the annual growth ring boundary. Okay. And so if I went and hit a tree in the side on the trunk and created a wound, it would try and wall off a couple few layers in on the annual growth ring. On a branch cut, do you know that there is no annual growth ring to block that? And the branch protection zone is supposed to be what functions for that to spread, to stop inward spread of fungi or dysfunction. And so the problem being is every branch protection zone is different based on size and species. And so now we have a uniform model of, hey, we're going to go cut outside the branch collar and the branch bark ridge. But you know what? Some are advancing. I have dissected many trees where they have advancing branch protection zones. And if you cut that low, you're actually cutting into part of the response. I have many cross sections where the amount of dysfunction that spreads into the tree, it varies with each one, and some have a robust. Now, here's the only reason that people say make that target prune right outside immediately, and it's for infection, because if you leave a headed section, they're worried about it being infected. But I would argue that leaving a headed section and then pruning it back with a target prune outside of the branch collar, branch bark ridge, after a certain amount of time has taken place, I would argue there's not enough time for infection. And the areas that are prone to infection aren't very common. It's a footnote, should be a footnote in arboriculture, right? It shouldn't be the main theme and the main standard for everybody. And so the model I'm trying to test is, if you have a 2-inch branch, you leave, and it has to be removed, you leave 2 feet of headed section for 2 years. If you have a 6-inch branch in diameter, you leave six feet for 6 years, and then you make the target prune. And so it's a 1-1-1, 1-inch branch, 1 foot, 1 year, and then you cut it off. That allows that translocation of resources. It allows time for a robust wound occlusion response in the branch protection zone, right? And it also, if it's a big branch, like a 12-inch diameter branch, which people remove sometimes, it's leaving 12 foot of headed section, which can actually offset a quick change in wind loading dynamics. And so now you're functioning in favor of the tree. And so this is just one of the areas that I'm researching right now. Hope that we make some ground on it. I know the industry is aware that it's true, right? But being true and getting it put into the ANSI pruning standards and stuff like that, two different things altogether.
Well, and then having it adopted by some of these tree care professionals, because I know you hear it all the time, especially as you're consulting, just like Joe and I hear it. Well, yep. That's what I've always done. That's what my dad's done. That's what I grew up doing. Those trees are still there. But, you know, science and what you're doing and what we're trying to do is really progress this thing past where we are. Let's move to the future, people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's exciting. I'm looking forward to the future. Because one thing that nobody really understands is they get some education, or maybe they just go through some classes, or maybe the company they work for gives them a little bit of something to go on. And then they operate inside of that house. And our house that they're operating in is the standards that we have, any kind of education you can get. That's what's been practiced. That's the house. But the fact is the house isn't for us to live in and operate in. We're supposed to stand on that house and build the new house, because we're not there yet. We haven't arrived yet. I mean, our understanding of trees is infantile. I mean, it is so immature at this point, because I believe it came from a flaw that we think we're going to add something good to the tree instead of saying, okay, what does the tree do? And how could we duplicate that and aid the tree? And so we're so trying to make it a toilet that will flush. And if it doesn't flush, we throw it out and get a new toilet. But it's a living organism.
You said it. I was just going to say that. A living organism that's been around for millions of years before us. It's been doing fine without us. And at this point, I want to welcome Joe Aiken to the show, because I know he's got some input on this, as I know we're both passionate about this topic.
Hey, welcome. Well, thanks for letting me jump on. Mother Nature got hold of me on a travel day back from North Carolina. It was stormy down there in Atlanta. So to you and our listeners, I apologize for being late, but I made it. Here I am, just listening in amazement on the discussion. And I know I missed part of it, but Chris, you're dead right. We don't know anything. The more we know, the less we do know, and the harder it is to understand. And a good friend of mine just published a document or writing about exactly what you said. That's just the way we've done it. That's all we know how to do. Mm-hmm. And if they don't know how to prune it correctly, then they can find a good way to talk that homeowner into removing it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of trees that are being damaged unnecessarily. And I don't know how to get to change. I was thinking, you know, one of the things that we look at, Chris, is the BMPs. When's the last time that you looked at the pruning BMPs?
Yeah. I think a lot of what we need to be doing is, and this may come across funny, but people need to be shamed. Okay. And they should be ashamed. All right. And we have to set a standard. A lot of people say, well, if we had more regulation in arboriculture, if we had this, if we had that, those things aren't really going to change anything until we take control of our industry and put it out there. And I meet people all the time where I have to kindly shame them and just say, hey, you know what? You're way off on this one. And I understand that that's what has been practiced for years and that's what people do, but you're destroying your tree, you know, and the industry is really right now removing tree parts for profit, right? Doing it continually until the tree is in decline and then you get the big bang and you get to remove it. And that's our industry. And nobody wants to admit it, right? Everybody wants to put a good foot forward and promote the industry. But the fact is that every tree owner that you run into has this preconceived notion that if they're going to be a good tree manager and take care of their tree, they have to cut on it. They just have to. And our industry promotes that. You know, how much of our gross revenue revolves around chippers, crews, and cutting off tree parts? And you missed part of the early discussion that me and Corey had about where my company is at right now, but I don't need to remove a lot of tree parts, you know, and Corey made reference of it with a client saying at some point, that's all. And the truth is the less you cut, the better you're doing. And it actually takes more education and more time to make 5 strategic cuts on a tree or 10 strategic cuts on a tree than to come in and lop off 3 of the lowest branches and the tree gets lifted and the client says, oh, it's great. And they walk away with a tree that's going to die or is going to go into decline. And so you go in and it's a totally different game. But, you know, these practices need to be shamed. I mean, I started one yesterday, a tree risk assessment, and the whole thing started with this. You know, you're not in a forest, right? And this is in Des Moines, where it's all oak trees. I mean, it's an old forest, I mean, without a doubt. But if you look around, it's all grass. There's no pioneer growth. There's no organic material going down. And I just looked at him and I said, you've got this 150-year-old oak and all your neighbors have 100-plus-year-old oaks, but you know you're not in a forest, right? I mean, this is where you have to start with people so they understand, hey, we have some challenges here. You're expecting this mature tree that's under a ton of stress to carry the load for the entire forest and there's no replacement coming. And you have to understand with the realism that, you know what, there's 3 ways you're going to go about this. You're going to reduce the risk by removing the tree. The tree had a massive wound and has some issues. You're going to reduce the risk and try and keep the tree with some minimal reduction pruning, right, which is going to shorten the lever arm and the torque on the weak spot of the tree. And, or you're going to be an outright nut and you're going to try and take stress off the tree and deal with the insects that we had identified on the tree. And you're not going to cut anything back. And if it breaks, you're going to deal with it. And if you cut anything, it's going to be dead branches. And I said, that's really the only 3 things you can do. But all of those revolve around the fact that the tree's not going to live forever. I mean, the tree is on a very limited lifespan based on being in the urban environment. And so if you don't start at that point, where do these people go? And so if you don't start at that education point, they are just cutting on their tree, maybe totally clueless to the fact that, hey, their tree's challenged. I mean, their tree has some issues and really we need to be aware of it.
I think you hit on something that was really pretty profound is that you're right. The general public feels like they have to. It's one thing I wrote down, I wrote a term pruning cycles. So when an arborist gets in, when's the last time you had this pruned? Oh, it's been 7 years. We better get up in there. We got to clean this out again.
Oh, shame.
Oh my God, we got to get up in there. So I ran into a situation where I consulted for a city here in Southeast Michigan, and all of a sudden they're worried about decay. A big, big, large pruning cut near the base. Obviously it elevated it at one time. 10, 12 inch diameter lead they took off. So now there's decay. So now they're worried about decay. And the reason they got decay is because they made a wrong pruning cut. So I went out there and evaluated, and I said, well, here's what I would like to do. First of all, I want to know how bad the decay is. Can we do a sonogram on it? Can we just see what the stem of this tree looks like? Let's try something. And he says, well, I don't know. I says, can't you just cut that end off? I says, yeah, but the previous guy that you had touched this tree, lion's tailed it all the way out to the end. So if I did do a reduction cut, then I would have to hope to God there's enough energy in that tree to maybe push out an epicormic or lose the whole lead eventually. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's just there's some practices out there that, excuse me, we've been in it for a long time. You still shake your head that there's guys out there doing it and getting paid well for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the pushback that needs to happen, because they're wearing a professional hat when they shouldn't be. They should be wearing a shame hat with a big sign on it that says, I'm a ding dong. You know what I mean? And that's the bottom line. And I don't mean to discredit anybody, but the fact is if you're not putting the tree first, if profit factors into what you're doing, which we all struggle with, I mean, we're all making a living, right? If you're literally cutting tree parts and that's how you make a living, you look at the ash trees right now. I mean, anybody in my area can start up a tree service, or if they have one, I've watched some of these companies expand times 10 from what they were 6 years ago, 8 years ago. They are adding trucks and crews, and I'm sitting here watching it and I'm going, where does this go? Because you know, when all the ash trees are cut down that nobody's treating and that are dying in the city, once those are gone, right, what are you going to do with your overhead? Well, a smart person might say, well, I'll sell some equipment, I'll lay off some people, I'll downsize. Not everybody's smart, right? And so many people are going to hang on to that, and they're going to probably more likely than not want to cut more tree parts. I mean, and so we're talking about a wide stripping of the urban forest that's going to occur based on just people setting themselves up in that position. You know, it's really why I set myself up on the consultation level or tree risk assessment or evaluation or, you know, vitality assessment. That is the, it's not the bulk of my income, but that is the 100% way that I generate clients. I don't generate them any other way. There is no, leads that come from this or that. It's literally starts from there. And so what it does, it allows me the flexibility. You know, I can go do a root crown excavation if required, right? If there's a population outbreak of a certain insect, or we have a pathogen come in that needs to be dealt with, I can flex and aid clients that are coming through the system in that area. And so I'm not stuck on, oh, I got to cut tree parts. Like, it starts at the right point and you become the prescriber of the care. And if you have all of the tools that you need in the industry, now you can flex with what's going on. I mean, do you have a big year with a lot of, winter burn and you're dealing with that? Are you dealing with saw? I mean, and so it gives you more flexibility.
It's amazing, Chris, how many of these themes you keep bringing up that I think our listeners need to hear, and they need to put this on repeat. But it comes down to not just right tree, right place, but right prescription for the right diagnosis for that tree. Amen. And I know we're kind of coming to a close on our conversation for today, but I'm wondering if there are any final points you want to get out, any words of encouragement or wisdom to the next generation of arborists or people that just could be doing things better. What would it be?
Yeah. I would say break free and get back to whatever brought you into the industry. I mean, almost all of us to a person came into the industry because we love trees. There was something there that did it for us, right? There was a connection there. Almost all of us get caught up with the overhead and get bound by the bottom line. We deal with, managing, babysitting employees and dealing with broken equipment. And our life becomes about anything other than the tree. And I would tell people, at all costs, strip anything that distracts you from your love of the tree. And at the end of the day, my happiness comes from standing with a tree, with a person that's the manager of that tree, and being able to help them do what's best for them. And you have to put yourself in that position. If you put yourself in any other position where money is an influencer and you're stuck in a grind of doing things a certain way, you're going to become burnout, miserable, and you're not going to be an asset to the industry. The industry really revolves around, we are the caretaker of trees, not the undertaker of trees. And so if you get into that undertaker role, you got to get out and you got to get back to that caretaker role, because we're the representative and we have to represent them well. And it's going to give credence to everything we do.
Yeah. Make the tree your customer. You're the tree is your client. Wow. Because you know, they come, you know, homeowners come and go, but the tree is your customer.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else to add to that, Chris Olson. I'll just say thank you truly, sincerely. I'll reach out to you after we end the recording just for some info. If people want to find you, maybe a website or something like that, we'll put that in the show notes. But truly, I mean, great conversation. I look forward to seeing you present on a stage somewhere sometime real soon.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.